Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. A new book called Obama and Oral History, 2009 to 2017. Brian Abrams wrote this book, and he's the author of three best-selling Kindle singles, An Oral History of Late Night with David Letterman, which I bet was really interesting, Gawker, An Oral History, and Die Hard, An Oral History. So this book, well, you say you wanted to keep it under 500 pages.
I did, yeah.
This book is a big book, but when I tell you, when you get into it, it is so engrossing. Oh my gosh. I was like, okay, I got to put it down for now. But it's so interesting. First of all, what made you want to tackle Obama of all people?
Yeah. Well, first off, thanks for saying that about the book. I feel like I've had friends that look at it and they think it's this giant doorstop. It's this brick, you know, and because of the format of it, I mean, it really does read fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like your listeners should probably explain what the format is and of the oral history.
Go ahead.
Which is essentially, I went out and spent 2 years interviewing more than 100 people who were working at the Obama White House, or they were members of Congress, or they worked at federal agencies, cabinet secretaries, Republicans, Democrats alike. And through these interviews, I kind of pieced together this giant jigsaw puzzle of a story that explained the Obama presidency. Mm. You know, basically, it's a story of politics, policy in Washington from the last decade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, stop me if I'm rambling, but as you mentioned, you know, my previous oral histories were all kind of pop culture, entertainment stuff.
Yeah.
And I just got to the point where I wanted to do some serious heavy lifting. And, you know, we've reached a point in time where it seems like politics has consumed us all, and that presented an opportunity.
Well, compared to this administration, as people said, it's so true, Obama was like quiet and quaint. He was a dormouse compared to this one. But you talked to senior staffers like David Axelrod and Valerie Jarrett and Barney Frank. You talked to some big folks. How did you get them to agree to really talk to you and to really tell the truth about what was going on?
Yeah, that was tough. And yeah, and I agree. I miss a boring presidency. Wouldn't it be nice to have a boring White House again? Those were the days. That was true bourgeois privilege on our part to be able to not have to pay attention every day.
Yeah.
Getting the sort of inner circle of Obama folks to talk to me was difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have any sources cultivated in D.C. At the beginning of this book, and you know, so they had no reason to know my name, and I certainly had no reason to reach out to them at the outset. I needed to build some credibility first, and so I began on the outside and speaking to, for example, you know, junior White House aides that had worked there the first couple of years and ended up going off and becoming civilians again, or retired congresswomen or senators. And you know, you kind of work your way on the periphery for months and months and months until you get to a point where, you know, say you have 60, 65 people under your belt that are on the record, and you can reach out to Valerie Jarrett's assistant and say, hey, you know, my name's Brian Abrams. I'm doing this book. I've spoken to 75 people. Please tell Valerie her name's been mentioned 37 times. If she's got a half hour, we could, you know, talk. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the half hour turns into an hour, and, you know, you take it from there.
Wow. Wow. I'm so surprised that you got so many senior staffers, but excellent, excellent. And they were they... Do you think they were really being transparent with you, or were they kind of, let me be careful, let me tiptoe through this interview?
Oh, a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. Little bit of both. You know, I mean, in the case of Valerie, she's really like a classy, like delightful woman, and we have a really lovely, like intelligent conversation. Mm-hmm. There's not a bad thing I can say about her. That said, I mean, there's no question that she was, you know, protective of her boss, right? Mm-hmm. She was a mentor to him for as far back as, you know, before he was even in the U.S. Senate. But that protectiveness is just part of who she is.
Yeah.
I mean, so if that makes sense, she's guarded.
She's guarded. Now,
that said, there are people who will just let it all hang out. And so that's in the book, too. And that's just the way people are.
Yeah.
So it's nice that you have that mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anyone's just sort of natural reading comprehension, you can kind of pick up on it as you go through the book. And so those different vibes kind of complement each other in a weird way.
So you started.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. You started, you know, long before he was ever going to run for president, although I always wonder, did he really know long before that, when he was just a senator, that he wanted to be president one day? But you started long before that, and in conversation, it was kind of funny because people were telling him, look, you can't do this, you can't say that, you can't, you know, and I think he was just being okay. I don't know, was he being a little cavalier in the beginning of it?
You're talking about like in his years in the Senate and or maybe in or the 2008 campaign.
Right.
I mean, I think what you're looking at, I mean, I couldn't tell you if he thought he was going to be president in the year 2004. It's certainly there's no question he was an ambitious and, you know, articulate man who had aspirations. I mean, that's crystal clear, but when we talk about the way we heard him speak on the campaign trail or even during, say, like, you know, his book tour in 2005, I mean, you're talking about someone who was changing the way Democrats sounded at the time.
Yeah.
And so he was, in my opinion, like exhibiting leadership. So he was just leading the way and inspiring people to sort of gather, and he got like liberals involved in politics that weren't involved before. And, you know, I mean, you see a whole generation of activists today that were babies when that was happening. So there's certainly an influence there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You say there's three parts to this book. So talk about that, three different categories of this book.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mentioned that the other day. The way I kind of felt about how I pieced the story together was that I knew, as you kind of mentioned at the beginning, I always knew I wanted this book to be 500 pages or roundabout there. I felt that there is the universe of Obama world, you know, it's so vast that it requires something meaty, something heavy. Anything less than that feels like it's cheap. But anything more begins to feel like a reference book, and I don't want this to be homework for anybody.
Yeah.
But I knew that I couldn't squeeze everything into it. And so there were things that I just couldn't get to. I don't know what would be a good example. Say, you know, the Citizens United decision on a campaign finance law from the Supreme Court is an episode during the Obama presidency that's critical to talk about, but it's not in the book. I couldn't find a way to fit it in because I don't think I had the space. And then there was just a truth that there were just certain things I couldn't get, period.
Yeah.
That there were certain national security folks that wouldn't talk to me about, say, you know, Russia's invasion of Crimea for whatever reason. And I was also under a little bit of a clock, too. I needed to get this thing wrapped up because it was already months overdue with the publisher. So I guess there were just these different categories where I felt constrained to tell a story, but I still wanted you to walk away with a book where you felt like, oh my goodness, this is truly like a definitive experience of what it must have been like in there.
Yes, I think so. One of the most fascinating sections of the book is foreign policy. The handling of the wars, the Arab Spring, the killing of Osama bin Laden. This was just fascinating reading. And it's like, it's reading like a novel, but this is real. This was what was going on in the White House. It's fascinating.
Yeah, that's a huge compliment. Thank you. I mean, you know, you want a book that, even though it is talking about real life and people that do suffer from these events or that do seek justice from these events, that you still want a book that you get sucked into, you know? You want to, I mean, that's a, we are living in a really weird time if you want to flash back to the year 2011 and look at the Bin Laden raid and consider that like an enjoyable reading experience. But yeah, there were a lot of elements to the sort of foreign policy, national security discussions in the book, and I personally was fascinated by, there's kind of multiple threads in the book that talk about the Obama administration's attempt to pivot to Asia, which would have culminated with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is now we're not a part of.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, but that was at the beginning. You could see at the beginning, you know, right into office, he knew that pulling out of Iraq and Afghanistan, which was, you know, that seemed to be, you know, on the agenda, whether it could happen or not. Mm-hmm. I think they soon discovered that it couldn't. But
not totally, anyway.
Pulling out of that wasn't enough. That the U.S. needed to have its eyeballs on another part of the world where it could focus on, you know, the economy and a new alliance, and Asia was kind of the place that we were supposed to go.
You know, I really think that in this book, it shows the reader how many moving parts there are. I mean, and it's not just like, you know, in a family dynamic, it's like in a world dynamic. How many moving parts? I mean, this was just a spattering of people that, you know, would talk to you, but there were so many more. And it just shows us how things are connected and how some things are disconnected. But that we really need to look at things in its totality and not in the small parts that they are, because they're all connected.
There's definitely a human element to this. I mean, these are actual real people with arms and legs that are making these agencies work every day. And it isn't just, you know, the blowhards on TV yelling and screaming. I agree. I mean, it's so vast. It's hard to wrap your mind around every single arm, you know?
It is. So even we have an appreciation. I think it gives us an appreciation for a difficult task of what it is to run the world, you know, to run the United States, and to make the best decisions that they can possibly make or not. You know, a lot of things happened. But did you find anything at the end of the day, at the end of these 500 less pages, would people appreciate the presidency of Barack Obama, or do you think it would be more critical? I mean, it was critical while he was in it. I don't know how he did that, because it was just the worst time to, you know, to be a black president and have that criticism every day. I mean, it just had to be like a wall on your shoulders. But do you think that, you know, at the end of the day, this showed on him in a good fashion?
Well, I think that, I mean, for one, the criticisms that he received, there was a racial undertone to 99% of those.
Absolutely.
That's just the way it is. And if there's anyone out there that thinks that that's some kind of crutch or some kind of excuse, then they're not wearing the right set of goggles.
Right.
But, you know, certainly, I mean, that's a complicated question, right? Because on the one hand, today we are so obsessed with what's happening now that to look back and wonder about the legacy of something from 2009 to 2017, we might as well be talking about Calvin Coolidge.
Exactly. It doesn't matter anymore.
And so history requires time for us to get a true passing of judgment. True. But, hopefully this is a text people can go back to and you know, really kind of take a look at just what happened. And I think, you know, my emotions personally, I mean, they go up and down all the time. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of stuff that I get angry about that I wish we went harder on. And then there's other things I feel really proud about that the administration doesn't get credit for. Yeah. I know I'm speaking in generalities, but it's just such a big question to unpack.
Right. Okay, so our time is up. Brian Abrams is the author. The name of the book is Obama and Oral History, 2009 to 2017. You have to go get it. It is fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us, Brian.
Thank you, Twanda.